right now. Stay tuned for the Dr. Future Show.
Welcome to the Dr. Future Show. We have a special announcement that Rosie has been about to deliver.
Yeah, I wouldn't exactly call it an announcement, but it's very important news for our little Santa Cruz community here.
Yes, Rosie. It is. Good afternoon, everybody, and thank you very much to the Futures. We do have the latest information that has literally just come in from the Santa Cruz Police Department. It is concerning the stabbing that occurred yesterday afternoon at 11:50 on Ocean Street by the 7-Eleven and the Santa Cruz Hotel. After notification of the family, including out-of-state relatives, the Santa Cruz Police Department is able to identify the victim as Shannon Kathleen Collins of Santa Cruz. Ms. Collins was a well-respected downtown business owner and community members, and the police department is asking that community come together to support the family in this tragic event. Yesterday at approximately 9 p.m., Charles Anthony Edwards III was booked into Santa Cruz County Jail for homicide. Mr. Edwards was extensively interviewed by the Santa Cruz police detectives. The Santa Cruz County District Attorney's Office and State Department of Justice also aided in that investigation. After interviews with multiple witnesses and Mr. Edwards, investigators established the victim did not know Mr. Edwards. It appears that this was a senseless, unprovoked, and random attack by Mr. Edwards upon an innocent victim. There is no clear motive. Investigators are attempting to reconstruct where the victim was heading from and traveling to at the time of the attack. Mr. Edwards has an extensive violent criminal history in San Francisco. It would appear that he has been in the city of Santa Cruz for approximately a week. During the course of the investigations, a few of the elements that were originally reported by the police department were deemed to be inaccurate. Mr. Edwards did not have any local contacts with law enforcement. He is 43 years old, and the victim is 38 years old. And for those of you that do not know the business that Ms. Collins had, it is Camouflage, which is a lingerie clothing store on Pacific Avenue. It has been there for many years. We have staff members here at KSCO who are very close with Shannon, and we had known about her identification some hours ago, but chose not to list it until such time as we had the definitive ID from the police department. I know of her by her reputation for being a delightful and charming person. Mm. She was on foot and she had just come from having her hair done and was possibly returning back to Camouflage on foot, decided to take a shortcut, and unfortunately that was where she met her demise in a violent, bloody and unprovoked stabbing in broad daylight. This guy had been loitering in the vicinity for approximately the week. He hadn't caught the eyes of the police beforehand, but he did have this extensive violent criminal history in San Francisco. He is on bail. It is $875,000, but that does not bring back Shannon Kathleen Collins, a shining and beautiful member of our Santa Cruz community. And I think as a community, we need to be taking a very long, hard look at this situation and as to what we can do about it. And there have been stabbings before, but there had not been a woman stabbed before, and there certainly wasn't anything that was as tragic as this. So that is unfortunately the information that I bring you today, but we were waiting to hear officially before we said what it was. So you might want to pass by the store and pay your respects for Shannon Collins of Santa Cruz.
Yeah, senseless act of violence in broad daylight on Broadway.
Yeah, and people called. There were, I believe, 10 calls to 911, if my information is correct, but people didn't run out into the street. And by the time somebody did, as soon as they had called 911 and they tried to give aid, but she passed away on the scene. So it was obviously just a terrible attack. Sorry to be the bearer of bad news, but a lot of people have been asking about this and wanting to know.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah, Camouflage has always been great on First Fridays.
Oh, yeah. That is really right in the heart of Santa Cruz, a very dearly treasured place and person, and my deepest sympathies.
Yeah. So. I guess our closest connection would be we have no artists that have put art up in their store.
Yeah.
For Fridays and other special occasions.
Yeah, yeah. Mm. Camouflage is really a local favorite for a lot of people that we know, just as a place to see your community in action, get cute clothes for parties. My heart goes out to her family.
Yeah.
So we have here on the Dr. Future show, in the shadow of that sad news, we are going to be trying to do our part to keep the focus on some things to keep the more positive elements in mind.
Ironically enough, for our second hour, our guest is Dr. Eric Pearl, who wrote a book called The Reconnection, Heal Others, Heal Yourself, which is a story of a very popular chiropractor in L.A. who discovered miraculous healing. And he went through a major transition in his life with that. And we're going to get him to tell his story a little bit for the second hour.
Yeah, he has some very interesting views on healing and about how it is a receiving energy that gives people back their original perfection. And then they get to do the work with a little bit of help. Also, I'd like to just say that we have our dear co-host MC Hager on the line.
I know. I'm just absorbing it with everybody else, I think. Major shift in energy.
Yeah, it's not exactly fits our 500-mile-a-gallon technology, but that's okay. That's okay. These are real important, deep issues of our own community.
They are.
And we need to cover them.
Well, and, you know,
they
here
are.
We, a Dr. Future show, I mean, we mm-hmm. do like to imagine what's coming, but if we can't solve the community problems that we have today, we cannot free ourselves to get to this future that we all aspire to. Mm. So, you
well,
know,
there are many
yeah.
approaches here.
It starts now.
I mean, we have one story that studied the psychopaths with MRI scans.
Oh, yeah, that's a very interesting link.
Wow,
was in the
another
context.
Intense topic.
Well, since we're there.
Yeah. Okay, going with that mood, how about...
Well, the idea...
psychopath's brain look on this scanner?
Well, you thought...
Well, it looks like a Rorschach test on acid.
Yeah, well, the researchers are pretty serious folks from King's College London's Institute of Psychiatry. And they said that the differences in psychopaths' brains mark them out even from other violent criminals with antisocial personality disorders.
Yeah, quote some of those statistics. It's fascinating that there's actually a measurable form.
The study shows that psychopaths who are characterized by a lack of empathy had less gray matter in the areas of the brain important for understanding other people's emotions.
Ah, well, that would explain a lot now, wouldn't it, Dr. Fisher?
Yes. The thing that scares me is false diagnosis. You want to be...
Are you sure? You want a second opinion?
Yeah. I mean, I wouldn't want to be thrown into the lot of a psychopath just because of the way my brain matter is layered.
And I know. I've seen your brain matter on a scanner before. It's pretty crazy.
Yeah. I mean, it adds a whole other level of security that, you know, definitely an issue worth discussing.
Well, there's a big difference between studies which are looking at the brains of criminals versus thought crime predictors for police to use, right? We're not talking about identifying people who are likely to commit crimes. We're actually looking at populations of criminals. And in these populations of criminals, they're noticing that about 40% of the criminals seem to have an identifiable quality to their brain that would identify them as having less empathy.
Psychopaths' brain have significantly less gray matter in the anterior rostral prefrontal cortex and the temporal poles than the brains of non-psychopathic offenders and non-offenders.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but they're not worried about it.
Right.
It doesn't faze them.
Well, what it says...
Oh, so he has more gray matter. I don't care about him.
Yes. Yeah. Well, the study says that such people typically react in an aggressive way to frustration or perceived threats, but most are not psychopaths. And they actually divide the group into two groups. They describe people who are hot-headed, which, you know, they might have a short fuse, but they actually are not sociopaths.
They're not
they do have
the
ability
back.
To have compassion, but they might have a temper, versus the 40% of the criminals who are considered to be cold-hearted because right. they literally cannot feel the empathy.
They'll just smile at you as they put a drill into your brain.
Yeah, they start earlier. They engage yeah. in a broader range and greater density of offending behaviors and respond less well to treatment programs.
Yeah. So less gray matter in the brain's social areas They used magnetic resonance imaging to scan the brains of 44 violent adult male offenders in Britain who had already been diagnosed with antisocial personality disorders.
Interesting if you could stimulate the growth of the gray matter in some way and see if it's causal or effect.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, if they had more gray matter, would they be more empathetic? Or do they just not have the gray matter because they don't spend time exercising empathy?
I see, a chicken and egg thing, what mm-hmm. you're saying.
Right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, nevertheless, it's an interesting study that kind of fits in with our trying to grapple with what can
right.
we do in the face of crime and craziness and totally unnecessary suffering and the local phenomenon of criminal transience.
Well, what they've right. shown is that most violent crimes are committed by a very small group of persistent male offenders with ASPD.
Yeah.
I think they show up at your parties sometimes, you guys.
Oh, come on. When have we ever had anybody like that at our parties?
I'm kidding.
Our parties would go away pretty fast. It just takes one, right?
No, actually, I'm on duty. If there's somebody at our party who is not really in the love vibration, who's not like a dear friend, they do not get to stay.
That's true. I've seen that happen. Hey, before we go to a break, I just wanted to catch you up. So I have an update
today. Could we go to the break and then do the update? I know it's probably...
Exactly. That's what I was cueing you for. We got to go to a break, and I'm going to do an update after.
All right,
good.
Sweetie.
Good. Look forward to
Perfect.
It.
Perfect. Thank
yes,
you.
Yes, I'm at the Conference on Lasers and Electro-Optics. And I have a fascinating update with some key tidbits for you, Dr. Future.
Wonderful.
Oh, boy, that's wonderful.
Optics, fiber optics.
All right.
Lasers.
Lasers and electro-optics.
Electro.
That's very exciting.
Yes, it's different than fiber.
Mr. Past bringing Dr. Future some laser tech. So we'll be...
And more data.
And more data. Great. So we'll be right back. More right. on the Dr. Future Show here on KSCO 1080. Salinas, Santa Cruz, Monterey, San Jose, Santa Cruz.
Welcome back to the Dr. Future Show. We have MC Hager online from Silicon Valley at an electro-optics conference. You want to give us
That's
a little
right.
download?
Absolutely. It is CLIO. It is actually the Conference on Lasers and Electro-Optics. It is the leading event for early-stage lasers and electro-optics and has been for 50 years.
Hmm.
Their peer review program is second to none, and the selection process is extremely competitive. The program structure is designed to showcase the full range of topics from fundamental laser science to photonic applications and cutting-edge products.
Anything that caught your eye particularly? So
yes.
Far?
This is where all the laser people come to show off their new stuff, huh?
There is, yeah.
Lasers, and cameras, action.
And what's fun, what you're going to love, Dr. Future, they got some stuff coming out. They got the little pocket laser projectors. Casio just showed their first consumer-level laser projector.
Oh, excellent.
And so that's,
in case you haven't heard about this, this is the next big thing in small portable projection systems instead of an LCD or a...
LCD and something that you pointed out with small lasers, and they've got now...
Right, laser they're laser-based. Right.
They're clear no matter how far away you are from the image. So you can have a little image that's clear or a big image that's clear. And all you got to do is set your cell phone. This is what's coming next, folks. You set your cell phone down and you have the image on the wall right next to you.
Right. And, you don't need a special screen anymore. And that's the thing about laser
right.
projectors. No matter what the distance you are from the screen, you don't need a lens. It's always in focus.
And you can focus on objects, and you can focus also for holographic technology and 3D technology.
Right. It could be a curved surface.
Another thing that you're going to like, Dr. Future, because it's going the other direction, low-cost entanglement generators. Yes. See, what a lot of people don't know in lasers is it's gotten to the quantum level, where they're, in fact, designing their lasers on chips. There was a revolution around the turn of the century at the turn of the millennium, rather,
mm-hmm.
where they discovered how to embed an entire laser on a chip, have all of the technology in silicon. And now that's gotten to be so extreme, they have all of these different creation of wafer layered materials that can generate all these different effects with light. And so they're talking about slow light. they're talking about ultra-fast light, they're able to separate particles and create photons that are entangled automatically, but then filter them out. Mm. So they're able to filter out slow photons, for example. And they've even had experiments where they were able to create photons that are going as slow as 17 meters a second. So if you imagine if you had a device where you sent out some of your photons first going at a slow rate and then slowly went the spectrum up to the fastest ones at the speed of light and even potentially beyond, right, then what you have is you can modulate where all of that data, all of those photons actually reach a certain point all at the same time.
Get a lot of data transfer.
It's a lot of, that's where they're going with it. And yeah. they're going with it also in encryption for code. Because what you have also when you're dealing on the quantum level is that that data doesn't exist when you're dealing with entanglement, right? Until it's sensed or the data is put in on one of the entangled photons, it doesn't exist on the other one. So there's no way of catching the data in between because the data isn't even being sent in between, right? So this is the fascinating thing. So what they finally realized is the killer app for this is encryption. Because it's a signal that can't be broken because it doesn't even exist between here and there.
Yeah, that was the second thing I thought of, encryption.
Yeah, of course, exactly. Mm-hmm. So you got it right away. Another good news from this conference is that they are closing the gap in what they call the green gap in OLED lasers, which are completely organic chemistry lasers. There was an area of green which always was not quite as vivid, and it's not quite as vivid, for example, in LED screens. But the new layer of lasers actually will have the most vivid greens you've ever seen.
Well, that's the other thing, is that when you use projection with vivid, bright colors, red, green, blue lasers, you can create a reality from the projection that's brighter than the sun outside. You know, it's almost like you're creating an artificial reality that is brighter and more real in some ways than reality itself.
And conversely, as dark. Because from a video geek standpoint, it's mm-hmm. your blacks. Because it's not just how bright your bright stuff is, it's how dark, you know, it's like when there's no light there.
There should be no light there, it should be black. And that's been really hard for our technology to do.
It's been very hard for video, even film.
And now you can have genuine blackness.
Yes, so we're going to have some excerpts on our show this weekend on It's Way of Love Live mm-hmm. from Clio. We're going to talk to some of the designers, and I wanted to give you guys a heads up, though, because I'm going to be playing some of them for Dr. Future Show.
Get those contacts at Casio. I want to take a look at that little laser.
Yeah, their new consumer laser projector.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I think that'd be most interesting.
We're going to be seeing a lot more of them. We're going to be broadcasting from the Film Fest.
Mm-hmm.
On Thursday, we're doing a live stream, if you guys can make it by, you know, in front of the premiere.
Now, we'll be here this weekend.
Come on down. We're telling everybody to come on down from the live stream, which begins at 6 to 7 in front of the Del Mar Theater. And they're going to be parking the CTV truck out there, and Mayor's going to be there making a proclamation. And we're going to have bands, and it's going to be a big party.
Cool. That's going to be really fun. That starts
on Thursday.
Okay.
Yeah, and then, of course, there's the big party at the Ma afterwards.
Right. That's always fun.
Yes. So we're going to also be pulling out some stuff with that.
Yes, this is the Santa Cruz Film Festival, May 10th through 19th.
So is the live stream the Thursday the 10th?
Yes, that is right.
Great. Checking. Okay.
Yeah, 6 p.m., the party starts in front of the Del Mar, big live stream, and then we're going inside for the first awards and then the premiere of California State of Mind.
Right, that's the Jerry Brown and his father.
Pat Brown, yeah.
Pat Brown.
Right.
Exactly. And the Great Shorts, too, the winners of the Good Times Impact Productions Short Screenwriting Festival.
Oh, I can't
wait.
It's
going to
be so fun.
Short Screenwriting Festival. Yeah, like 10-minute films, 10, 15-minute films.
Yes, but come join the broadcast. You can be part of the mass of people getting on TV at 6 p.m. in front.
That's right. Santa Cruz, come see Santa Cruz on Thursday
night
downtown.
We love doing it.
Yeah. It's going to be a really fun party. Looking forward to it. All right. Well, thanks so much, Mr. Pastor. Are you going to stay on with us while we go to some other articles?
Yeah, let's go for some other.
Yeah, I wanted to get your opinion. Talking about the past, I had a very interesting article on how scientists have estimated that dinosaurs passed enough gas to warm up the planet. And there's been some controversy on that topic. The early reporting of the story was quite alluring, suggesting that dinosaurs passed so much gas that they could affect the climate and cause their own demise. And at least that's how Fox News portrayed it.
Well, what does your intestinal bacteria think about that?
Well, closer investigation shows that that's largely hot air.
Oh, or methane, as the case may be.
So far, the dino-killing asteroid is still the leading theory for our understanding
right.
of dinosaur demises.
Unless they broke wind with iridium-laced gases.
That could be deadly.
Because that in the layer that identifies that it's very most likely an asteroid is the level of iridium in that part of the archaeological strata is very high, which is only seen matched in asteroids. Mm-hmm. That's why it probably was. There was an asteroid then, whether it was actually that which caused the plumes of gas that killed the dinosaurs, or they themselves were responsible.
Yes, probably the asteroid. But the bottom line here, according to the BBC, which was, I think, the most credible report I've seen, is that, first of all, you've got to look at cows. Okay, now, cows produce between 50 and 100 million metric tons of flatulence a year, while the sauropods, the dinos, they about 520 million metric tons. So that's 100 to 500 ratio, five times more from the dinos.
Right.
All right, so that's the bottom line. As to whether or not that would affect climate change, well, of course, that's a debatable issue.
But. You know, there is another counterbalancing factor.
Yeah?
And that is of industrial agriculture that is stripped of all the carbon-locking plants and other, like, swamps and all the other things that existed at the time. There is a much larger carbon content in the layer of the strata from the time of the dinosaur, right? And so what this is meant to often interpret it, it means that just the level of growth of everything was high. Mm. There were big animals, there were big trees. You know, that's when sequoias dominated the environment.
Right, so there were a lot more gas in the atmosphere already.
Entrapment. Yes, and there was a lot of things that were, and that's why we have the coal and the oil deposits that we do today. Wasn't because of the dinosaurs themselves, but because of all the plant matter that was also at that time, just for the same reason that you often hear that the tropics have the most diverse ecosystems in terms of total number of species. Well, a lot of people don't know that the redwood ecosystems actually have the largest biomass. Like where we live right now, of all the ecosystems on the earth, it has the most carbon in it. Hmm. You know, our layer is the thickest. And so theoretically, back in the time of the dinosaurs, the whole earth would have trapped more carbon.
Hmm.
Just the life, the plant life that was alive at the time. So that is just a counterbalancing factor to whatever the dinosaurs were pumping out themselves. And of course, that wouldn't mean anything if an asteroid hit, because all that would just burn up immediately and add to the problem.
Right, right. So as usual, it's, you know, the more you look at it, the more complex it gets.
Right.
Okay, well.
A fascinating story nonetheless.
Yes, it's good to know some numbers there. Now, another interesting thing is that we do have the transit of Venus coming up on June 5th, a global event. And
that's right.
Should be
another
able to
reason
see it.
To party.
We should be able to see it here in Santa Cruz pretty well. We're hoping that the weather is like today. I'm thinking
of... So there's going to be a party on Future Peak?
Well, I'm thinking of maybe one at KCO if there's enough audience interest. Maybe we've got to get an astronomer with a telescope that will allow us to see the sun in broad daylight. And
there you go.
If we can see it properly, we'd be able to see the disk of Venus moving across.
Now, is there a time of day?
There's a very specific time of day. During our show.
Like fog.
It's during
fog
our show.
Then there you go.
3:06 p.m., June the 5th. You know,
wow.
In the last 2 hours. So it'll go into Charlie's show right after that. A very rare
event. And maybe Charlie's show will never be the same again.
Well, you certainly have a remote here at AKS. Yeah, that'd be kind of fun. But we just need to find astronomers interested in doing that in an audience, and we'll do it here.
Well, I think you could get that one that Raquel and Mrs. Future really like. I bet she'd call in and do a little bit. Astrology lady on the TV.
Yeah.
She'd do a guest appearance, I bet you.
I'm sure she'd have something to say about it. There's also something a lot of scientists would say about it, too. So it's one of those phenomena that crosses the boundaries of science and shamanism. Something for everybody there.
The scientists say that?
Some of them, yes. Some of them that embrace shamanism.
Say it's all balderdash.
Yeah. I think the doctors coming on the second hour would probably embrace that. There's definitely more and more scientists that are becoming more shamanic and more shamans that are becoming more scientific. So it's an interesting
Nobody could argue with us that it's a reason to throw another great party.
It's a good place to mix them, I'll tell you.
Yes, and the scientists and everybody else argue all together.
It would be a truly mad scientist party. One of the things with the Venus transit, it is very rare. It only happens every couple hundred years. It happens when the Venus passes between the Earth and the Sun. They're rare because of the two planets' relative orbits. It looks like we might have a caller. Is that right, Mrs. Future?
Yes, we do. And I'm wondering, Mr. Past, am I going to be saying goodbye to you now, or are you going to stay on? Okay.
Okay, he's engaged in another conversation.
All right, so I'm going to say goodbye. Goodbye, Mr. Past. We're going to another call.
Call back if you get some time.
Bye-bye. Hi, Dave in Watsonville. Welcome to the Dr. Future Show. Did you want to talk about dinosaurs?
Good afternoon, ma'am. Yes, I did. I actually wanted to let Dr. Future know that you guys are looking for volunteer astronomers, right, to help you with some sort of project that you have going on.
Yeah.
Am I correct?
Well, we're thinking of that. Yeah, we're thinking that the Venus transit might be a nice thing to have a little event here at KSCO.
Yes.
Where we can show people what it looks like in real time, since it's such a rare, special event. The main thing we'd need, though, is an astronomer that has a telescope that can look at the sun itself, our local star.
That's interesting. You know, I am looking for volunteers as well to go back into time because I have just finished my time machine and I'm going to go back. I'm concerned about this dino fart thing. I think I've discovered a system. Before you laugh, I've discovered a system to recycle these things. Uh-huh. Now, they were originally designed to work on cows, but I think I can make a little adjustment, get them to work on dinosaurs. I'm about to get my time machine right now, Dr. Future.
Okay, good.
Go, Dave.
Come visit us, you know. Love
hold
to
on,
see
hold
it.
On here.
Oh, good. I hope you can show up. Can you aim for our studio right now in 2012?
Doing something right
I just
now.
Need to hit 30 miles per hour, and this bad boy will go into the past.
Yes.
Hold on.
30, that beats...
Holy, Dr. Future.
Yes.
I see the biggest beaver I have ever seen in my entire life. Dr. Future, I have got to park and check this out, Dr. Future. In the meanwhile...
Yes.
What era are you in here, Dave? Where did you land? Are you in the past? Are you in the future?
I am now in the past. I can't believe this phone is working.
Oh, my God.
I don't know how that happened, but I am now in the past.
It's the KSCO tech team, man. They just know what they're doing.
This place is crawling with prehistoric animals like I have never seen before, Dr.
Oh,
Future.
Oh, man. Pull out that iPhone, man.
I've got to go and wrestle this giant dinosaur, and I will. I bid you good luck, sir.
All right. Well, thanks for checking in, man.
Thank you, Dave, for checking in.
Yeah, bye. Oh, don't get crushed.
See you later, Dr. Future.
Don't light a match.
Bye-bye, Dave. Thank you.
Okay, bye-bye.
Hi. Welcome, Nick from Royal Oaks, to the Dr. Future Show. Did you want to talk about Venus and the Venus transit?
Well, I'm going to get into that because... Mm-hmm. I heard the Fukushima earthquake set us off the poles with a fraction of a second, so we were set backwards in time just a moment.
Oh, you think so? I hadn't heard that.
I say combined that, triggered by an asteroid hitting, would probably knock us our senses off our dinosaurs.
And probably knock us out, too.
Our Venus and Earth thing, yeah. When it passes through, I would suspect just for a fraction that they would change our direction of pull. Because they're going between the sun and the Earth, and they'd be blocking some of the magnetism.
Yes, well, I think the subtleties of it, the psychics perhaps might be more tuned to that than the scientists.
Awareness, a void.
Yeah, the consciousness awareness element, the shamanic element.
Because whether it be our tilt or our direction pull.
I don't think it's going to affect the physicality of the planet or anything. Any of the typical measures of science. I really don't think Venus is...
How about AM dial? I hear our drift is caused by the moon. Is that true?
The drift of AM radio?
Yes.
Well, I'll have to ask Billy.
I always have to turn my knob to the same direction. That's to the right.
Yeah.
To correct to the station of people with digital. Maybe they don't even know what we're talking about now.
Well, somebody actually listening to KSCO on an AM radio where there's drifting. You must have a classic radio.
That's locked in with digital.
Oh, yeah?
I guess. It's hard enough.
It is. Hey, listen, we're going to come up to a commercial. I appreciate your call.
You're welcome. Thank you for
taking
me.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
All right, Mrs. Future, there you go.
Oh, Flower.
Yes, son?
I was wondering if you wouldn't mind staying in your room tonight while my women's group comes over.
Women's group?
Yeah. So I brought you this copy of the Nag Hammadi.
The Nag Hammadi? Wow. This is like the definitive collection of Coptic, Gnostic, early Christian scripts. I'm getting upstairs and going to be immersing myself in this all night, son, with this cup of sludge that I've specially prepared.
I have a better coffee you might like to try. My Java Fit.
What's in it?
It's Focus Plus Multivitamin Coffee. It's really good for you.
Let me taste that. Wow, this is imparting a mental clarity and brain boost. I'm beginning to understand Gnosticism in a way that I never have.
I knew it. You should drink this coffee all the time.
Wow! I can understand this stuff. This Java Fit is
gourmet, fair trade, smooth coffee that makes you smarter.
Count me fit.
For more information, go to KSCOteam.com. Okay, welcome back to the Dr. Future Show. We were just talking about the Venus Transit and setting up a little event. See if you folks would like to actually see it.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of Venus Transit.
That's right.
You know.
Mrs. Future has been tracking for some time. I think you were in Maui in 04, Big Island, right?
Yes, we were on Big Island, and we got to watch it in 04, and that was a wonderful, it really tuned me in to how important the Venus Transit has been in the history of humanity and how at different points in time we've used it to learn things about the planet, like the distance between the Earth and the Sun. You know, the whole reason why Captain Cook set off for Tahiti was to go to Tahiti to measure the Venus Transit so that we could triangulate the distance of the Venus Transit in Tahiti and compare it with the distance measured in Europe and use those two triangulations to figure out the distance to the Sun. And that's how we learned how far it was from the Earth to the Sun a couple hundred years ago. So It's been very big in human history, and I'm very happy to be alive during one of the rare times that it happened.
As I said before, it has both shamanic and scientific interest, both in both ancient and medieval history times. So anyway, we have a link at that at our links page, drfutureshow.com/links.
Right,
A chance to check that out.
Yeah.
Okay, well, let's see what else we got today in the news before we bring on our guests at 3. There has been some more breakthroughs in the robot cars. They're getting ready to roll them out on a larger scale now. When they first hit, there's just a few of them back in 05, but now the first robot cars are hitting the British roads as well.
Really?
Yeah.
Where are they hitting the British roads?
They're starting to look at red flag laws. Early precautions.
Right.
Yeah. Well, basically, they will be able to drive way better than humans, and they'll be able to drive much closer together, and they're going to need different rules than humans on the road. I think initially we'll probably have them drive by human rules, but then humans will slow it down, and we'll start to need special lanes and things like that. But that's my prediction. It'll take a while for that to unfold, but initially they have to drive like we do.
Yes, well, this article about the idea of the red flag laws, those pertain to when automobiles first hit
the road. That's right. We had a similar situation with the horseless carriage.
That's right. When a horseless carriage was coming down the road in London, there had to be a person at the front of the car walking in front of it with a red flag saying that there was a horseless carriage coming so that people would get out of the way. And obviously that's just, it's laughable now to think that a car was replacing a horse-drawn carriage and they had someone walking with a flag to let people know what's coming. And yet you can see how appropriate that analogy is to thinking about how automated cars are going to replace cars with drivers, and we're going to need a whole different set of rules because
they'll be
people
different.
Don't need to be aware.
Like, for example, the robot cars will probably be networked, and they'll know what's going on miles down the road. Well, you don't know what's going to go on around the next turn.
Right, right. Yeah, you know? They've said that the kind of traffic technology that's going to be employed is collision detection technology such as they use for information packets on the Internet. So stop signs, stop lights, these things are going to go away. We're not going to be waiting for each other. We're going to be knowing miles ahead of time what's in our way and slowing down or speeding up accordingly.
Communication technologies are applied to transportation technologies.
Yeah.
So communications merges with transportation.
Isn't that interesting?
Isn't that strange? You'll see some very interesting autopilots on the cars as they're released. The big thing is not so much just the technology, but being able to ramp out this stuff at a speed that the public can handle. It's really interesting. Now, safety, definitely the number one benefit from this. 95% of accidents are human error, or at least a contributing factor. A self-driving car cannot be distracted.
Speaking of distracted.
Ah, there it is. Yes.
Hey, so Dr. Future, did you drive in England?
Yes. Yes, I did.
Because I love this idea, you know, of this technology transported to England. One of the things they have in England that we don't have here is they have a different kind of traffic sign that, you know, you see the signs that you drive. They have symbols on the road.
Right.
One of them is, in England, is just a black dot. And when you're driving along the countryside and you see a black dot, what that means is you're coming up to a space that has seen a particularly high number of deaths over the years. It's the death spot.
Yeah, it's kind of like seeing flowers on the side of the road.
It's funny because this is an official English road sign, right? And it's just a big black dot. And some people give some sort of mystical meaning to this, and some say it's just areas that are statistically more dangerous.
Yes.
Right? So I'm wondering what the black spots will be for the driver's cars. You know, it's like, oh, will they lose their connectivity somewhere around this hill?
Yeah.
And there's a tendency that they spin out of control. So just be aware that you might have to be on backup driver mode.
Sure, it's all the dead zones, right? All the dead zones when you can't make a phone call and the cars stall.
Robot dead zones. Yeah, no, that's tough.
Like, oh, I've got to actually grab the steering wheel now, dear. Hold on.
Well, that'd be very interesting. I know. It means you still have to pay attention to the road. We were hoping that might go away, but I guess not.
Well,
yes, and the other thing I wanted to know is about the cars.
Yes.
Is if they know, you know, if it's driving me and it knows, like, what the traffic conditions are, will it know when I'm late for work and then, like, call in, tell my boss and, like, make an excuse for me?
I think you're imagining from the past, Mr. Past, that we're still going to be driving to work.
Well,
I think we're going to have very different destinations.
But for $1.99, there's an app for that.
Yes.
Already.
Well, to afford that $1.99, I've got to make sure I get to work on time. And I want the app that will make up the excuse so I don't have to waste any time coming up with a story.
You know, there's a very interesting article today about how a private data market could ruin Facebook. And I think this relates to what you're talking about in terms of being late for work but needing to have that paycheck coming in so that you can afford to get the app. Well, this article is the first time that I've seen somebody in the mainstream talking about how to automate putting money into people's accounts instead of just automatically taking it out. And
thank you.
The idea here is that Facebook's value is off the charts, and it's primarily based on them being able to aggregate people's data and behavior and sell it. The proposal in this technology review article published in MIT Press is that the people who are sharing their data can be offered different incentives to participate, such as
cash.
Such as cash.
Well, it's like YouTube tries to do that. If you get a popular enough YouTube, they'll pay you a small amount per view. So why not Facebook? Why shouldn't you get some remuneration for your popular posts?
Well, if we think
you should get money for correct information so that, okay, they're going to be trying to gather all this information. They'll try to get information wherever they can, right?
Yeah.
But if you participate, and the whole point for all these marketers, right, it only really has value for them if it's accurate information.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the biggest problems is that so much of the stuff they think they know about you, they don't really actually know about you. They got it wrong. And so they should offer incentives for you, if you're interested, to participate by going in and updating all your information and telling them, no, this is what I really like.
Well, there's that, but there's also the idea of creating a whole market by offering people the chance to participate. So it's very much the way like scientific research or marketing research is done, and you need an unbiased sample. And so instead of just paying Facebook to spy on all of their participants, and the participants get nothing except that creepy feeling that someone's looking at them, instead, we send an invitation out to people to participate for a dollar. And they get chosen, they get the dollar. Maybe they won't get chosen, but they give their permission.
You can pay me for any unbiased information you want.
Right. And the problem is that, of course, that is going to make it very hard for Facebook to keep enough money to keep their stock value up. So we really have a crisis in perception of who needs to benefit when society shares information with itself. How can we move towards something that's more holistic rather than getting one person to benefit at the expense of everyone else? Here we are in an economy. Jobs are going away. Income is going away. And everyone's going hey, what happened? How do we fix that?
Well, maybe the doctors will be able to tell us about it the next hour.
Well, yes. Well, that's a part of the whole thing. I mean, you're seeing in the high-tech world distributed intelligence. You're seeing multi-core processors. You're seeing less hierarchical infrastructure. Now, I'm sure many industries are like that, including the health profession, where there is a hierarchy that's starting to change, or another layer of that part of the system evolving. In this case, distributed intelligence, where maybe everyone can heal themselves or heal each other. Small groups of people could perhaps heal each other. Perhaps that level of evolution is occurring.
I'm really looking forward to hearing what Dr. Eric Pearl has to say about that. You know, I think he has some really interesting insights about healing and what it is and how it works.
It's something that seems to be permeating many aspects of society right now, both including high tech and healing. And now the robot cars, like the robot cars are distributed intelligence. Did we lose Mark? Is he?
Yes, we did. He's gone.
Okay.
He said goodbye, I guess, sir. He's no longer there.
Politics is interesting. We had a couple of really interesting articles in politics.
1 minute, honey.
About how our next mayor could be a distributed intelligence network, how people can have sensors that are picking up information about the community. But infrastructure comes to mind, you know, looking at the quality of the air, the quality of the roads, the sidewalks, that sort of thing. All those could be monitored through people's smartphones, and that information automatically correlated and collected. There's a number of sites now that allow you to do that, where you take pictures of potholes and you send it in, and your town actually does something about it.
All right. So
things
listen,
like that.
Everybody, we are at the end of the first hour of the Dr. Future Show. We're going to be back in the second hour with our guest, Dr. Eric Pearl. So be sure and stay tuned to KSCO Santa Cruz for more of the Dr. Future Show.
Yes, thanks for listening, everyone.